Blog Talk Radio.
IMTM Worldwide Radio, and today we have our Books to Read show, first one in a while. I'm glad for everybody who is able to take the time to listen on a Sunday afternoon, also not a typical day I'm doing the show, but hopefully everybody is available. 646-652-4479 is the number. Now, today we are talking about a topic that sometimes a lot of people steer away from. Today, we live in very stressful times, and each day there are people that are trying to live with anxiety and depression, sadness, and many of these are young ones, are teenagers, young adults, and unfortunately, these feelings are leading to suicide, and if you've noticed, there's a rise in teen suicides right now in the United States. Is there anything that can be done to help them cope and to try to turn the tide of this? This is what we're going to be discussing today. Dr. Elisa Devlin will be discussing on our latest Books to Read show, her book, From Both Sides of the Chair. She's going to cover details in regards to what causes anxiety, being able to live with it, dealing with it. If you know anyone who should really listen to this show, I urge them, hey, don't miss this one. Tune in, listen in, call in. Of course, you can follow the show on Instagram and Facebook under the IMTM Worldwide Radio page. And, of course, Twitter, IMTM Radio. And please, if possible, download the Spreaker app and follow the IMTM Worldwide Radio page. With that being said, let's go ahead and introduce our guest for this afternoon, Dr. Elisa Devlin. Dr. Devlin, are you there?
Hi, how are you? Thank you for having me. I appreciate it, and I'm very honored to have time to talk. I absolutely love educating people because I think that is the only way that, first of all, the stigma that is attached to mental illness is going to slowly. I wish not slowly, but fade away and encourage people to seek help. And that's there. The key for any of this for us to make progress in helping people.
Very, very well said, doctor. And you mentioned it. It's an education factor, and sometimes. Well, that's why I even mentioned at the beginning of my intro. It's something that sometimes skirted, sometimes kind of pushed aside, and when you don't know, it's kind of hard to help anybody when you don't know. You don't know the signs, you can't tell what's wrong, and you know people in certain cases always kind of push others away to say, "Oh, I'm okay" and everything. But we've seen it just time and time again where they're not really okay. So. I'm glad to be able to have you on to be able to discuss this particular topic as well. But before we get started, as I try to do on, especially if it's a first-time guest, and this is your case, first time I've ever gotten a chance to interview you, I'd like to give the audience a chance to kind of find out a little bit about you, of course. Doctor, where are you from originally, and where did you grow up?
I'm from Philadelphia. No, I didn't. I never threw a battery at Santa Claus or a snowball. I am a very passionate Philadelphia fan. I grew up across the bridge, just a couple miles but I could see the skyline, and I spent a tremendous amount of time in Philadelphia on weekends with my grandmother at a very, very young age, and she would, I would say, make me streetwise and teach
okay.
me very, very, a lot of lessons. And I, at that time, I was raised by my father during the day because he worked night work. And during the day,
okay.
my mother worked, obviously, day work. So it wasn't a conventional type of childhood, but I am very grateful. And I knew somehow that I was going to care for people.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how, because I wanted to be an artist. I wanted to be a detective. But I gradually went along, and I would say, you know, my mother organized a lot of events. She is excellent at that. She would bring the mentally retarded into the house when I was like 4 years
mm-hmm.
old, 5 years old. And I had no fear. I felt very comfortable. And
mm-hmm.
She was very kind. I was going in the nursing homes with her. And when eventually I was going into nursing homes alone, and she didn't want me to, but I would sneak in them, and I would help the elderly. I would say I was early high school, and I would just volunteer, and I would run bingo games. I would help read to them. I would feed them. And most people in that age range don't do that. And I gradually, it's strange. I just gravitated to it, and I became the candy striper, which I don't even know if that term is used anymore, where you, you volunteer in a hospital. And I just took the steps to build my career, everything it took, step by step by step. And then I became a pharmacy aide. And I gradually, and, you know, people would come up to me and ask me what cough syrup to use. And I, you know, I was like 17. And
mm-hmm.
I thought, in my mind, I thought, what in God's name are you asking me for? But you have to project confidence. And gradually I became a nurse's aide, a certified nurse's aide, and I worked during vacation in college, and that really, I think every doctor should do that, because all you do is, you know, I was pooped on, peed on, slapped, kicked, punched, and you have to shower, dress, make their beds of like your list of six patients with before noon. It takes, it's a lot of work. But it was wonderful. In college, I went to an all girls Catholic college, which is not that anymore, Immaculata College. It's now Immaculata University, co-ed, and it is wonderful. I was taught by nuns and professors that if it weren't for them, I would have never, I would have never made it. I really wouldn't have. They cared so much, and I went on to, I remember the exact time I got my letter of acceptance to medical school, my first choice, which was Hahnemann in downtown Philadelphia.
Mm-hmm.
And I went right up to the I didn't tell anybody. I ran right up the steps, and the first place I went was to the chapel.
Wow.
And I remember exactly where I went. I did. I was so thankful. So once I got that, I immediately was able. I didn't have any money, and I am gay, and my parents disowned me, that's a very hard thing for people to understand, because I was, a good student. I was in. I had very high grades, and I immediately was able to apply to the military for a scholarship, and I got one and joined the Army, and was placed on reserve, and I went to the civilian school and intermittently did things for the it was the Army, I got an incredible experience. I loved the military. It was wonderful. I mean, the camaraderie. I had a new respect for the flag, what it meant. The chain of command, what our troops do, and it was unbelievable.
Wow. So Dr. Bevelin, I want to do this because, first of all, you've done a great job of actually pretty much answering a lot of the questions I was going to ask. And hopefully the audience, 646-652-4479 is the number, y'all, has enjoyed telling your story thus far. But I want to do just a little bit of a recap for those who might have just joined in. We're talking to Dr. Alisa Devlin. Right now we're talking about her experiences growing up as a young lady in Philadelphia. And, of course, me being an Atlanta fan, I won't hold that against you, Dr. Devlin. Your experience. I had to get you.
You know I had to get you eventually.
I got you. But your childhood definitely, in regards to, well, one thing I actually just want to say in general, and then I'm gonna let you continue, is anything that you do that's related to helping people, you have to really like people. Anything along the lines of being in front of a person. And saying that you're going to help them or want to help them, whether it be physically or mentally, anything along those lines, you really have to actually care about that person's welfare. And that's hard to do in most cases for people because it's not something that is initially taught. And this has to be something inside of you to want to be drawn. And it's kind of like you were talking about going into the hospitals and with the older ones and things of that nature, someone who might be mentally challenged and things of that nature. Most kids would be intimidated. They'd be scared. It's outright. Don't want to do anything along those lines. You gravitated towards that. And it kind of, like you said, stair-stepped you in a particular path going through, nursing and then medical school, things of that nature to where eventually you became a doctor. So I just wanted to just give the audience just a little brief recap in regards to that part, because that definitely goes into where you are now. Because I do have this question that I want to get to, is with all of the things that you experienced as a young person going through school and things of this nature, when was it, I guess, the first time that you felt that the study of our topic for today came into play, and then even want to write about it? Did writing become something that you thought about before the study of it, as far as the field itself, something specific about it? Which came first, and how did you come about it?
You mean committing to being pre-med?
Correct.
You know, choosing that as my major in college.
Correct.
Biology, chemistry. That,
yes.
You may find it hard to believe, but actually, I went to a very good, very good high school, and I actually the only accelerated or fast track class I took was English, actually, because I had a very caring English teacher in eighth grade, but I kept thinking to myself, because I just had this two gifts, not I guess gifts, I don't really like to talk about them like that, but I did one, did a lot of, I observed a lot of things when I was little. I did a lot of observing, and I did a lot of deciding what was a thing that I wanted to keep, and one, a lot of things that I would do differently. And, you know, both my parents are wonderful, wonderful people. That would give the shirts off their back, and all of my family, and especially my father's side, and my grandmother, and you know, they're deceased, and my father just died almost 2 years ago, and that.
Oh, sorry for your loss.
Really. Really, really destroyed me, because he was my rock. You know, I would call him and not think I would make it, and he'd be like, you don't try, you do. I mean, that was his, you know, he was very, he was very tough and nice. But as far as choosing for med, very quickly, towards the end of high school, there's a senior hall of fame where your picture and your story goes up for about 1 week in a little case. And I was a nobody in high school, and a nobody, because I came from a parochial school to a just a regular public high school. And I got this thing in my locker that I was nominated to go into that Hall of Fame. And I thought, are you just crazy? I use the word crazy, and I really shouldn't, but you shouldn't use the word crazy, but I use it a lot. But I thought, what? I thought it was a mistake. And I really had a very, not a high opinion of myself. So I took it to the vice principal and I said, is this a mistake? And I said, if it isn't, I said, I don't want to be in the Senior Hall of Fame. I don't deserve to be in the Senior Hall of Fame. I said, I haven't done anything at this school. I played soccer for a year. I said, and then I went right to work and I never stopped working. I said, I don't deserve it. And he said, you're doing it. So take it and go. And I fought with him. And he actually nominated me. And it was my an English teacher I had. I was so scared to put that up there, the autobiography type thing, a little short page. And I thought if I wrote that I was going into college pre-med, people would laugh at me. You know, like, that girl's going to be a doctor, yeah, right. So I wrote that I was going to go into some profession where I was helping people. And it was my mother who said, you know, I thought I would be an optometrist or something like that. Not that there's anything wrong with that. Those are great professions. But she said, well, why don't you just sign up and try pre-med? And you can always change. You know, if you don't like it or you don't feel comfortable, why don't you just try it? She tried.
Yeah.
And you know, whatever. Because I would love to do that. That's what I wanted to do. I just thought I never deserved it. And that was a seed that were probably planted long, long ago. I said, all right. In the first semester, I got a 3.67. I was 0.03 points away from making honor roll. But
okay.
I got that first semester grade, and I looked at it, and I remember immediately. I looked at that, and I said, I'll do this. I will get into medical school. No problem. No problem.
Wow.
And from that point on, most of my semesters were all 4.0s. I can remember the 2B pluses I got and 1B for a summer course where they didn't have B pluses. And I became very obsessed with being a perfectionist.
Okay. So here now what I want to do is switch to your book, From Both Sides of the Chair. First of all, that's a unique title.
Yeah.
How did you come up with the title?
I have to give that credit, the actual credit for the final title to my significant other of 13 years who, you know, put up with a lot. Because dealing with somebody who has a mental illness is very difficult. The original title, because I remember the exact time I decided to write this book, the exact time, the exact circumstance, where I was sitting, I remember everything. And I decided, and it was 25 years ago. I've been working on this for 25 years. It was originally going to be called Playing the Hand You're Dealt,
okay.
which is not really descriptive of what it's about. And we played around with the titles, and, you know, she's like, how about From Both Sides of the Chair? Because it really, truly is exactly what it says, because I will be to my knowledge, the first person to fully come out of right now is the time that I am fully coming out and saying to the world, I am a psychiatrist, a medical doctor who has suffered from a mental illness since 1991. At the same time, I was a psychiatrist treating mental illness. So I
wow.
was like looking in the mirror the whole time. The only problem was it was very complicated, and it changed my life because of and this is where I want to change things, and I want to make a difference, because the people who write these things, the DSM and all that stuff, are just a tad bit out of touch. And
because of the misdiagnosis, I would say hell between 1994 and 98. And it was good. It served its purpose. The struggle taught me so much. And I wouldn't trade it for anything in the world, because I wouldn't know all I know now. And I have to give so much thanks and gratitude to my patients. I just am so deeply, deeply, deeply thankful to them for the privilege that they gave me to treat them. Because they taught me so much that books really, really don't. I do feel a little embarrassed because I was an idiot between 94 and 98. But I am very grateful.
Well, that's a tremendous, that's tremendous, just in regards to just that part of your story currently, and it's of course ongoing, because of course that would not be typical, of course, and like you mentioned, for those who allowed you to help them, of course you have firsthand knowledge of really how they are feeling, and thus that title is very apropos from both sides of the chair. Now I can see exactly where that comes from. So let me ask you this, because we want to make sure that the audience gets to hear just some of it. Now, of course, we can't give all the juicy parts and things of that nature, but there are a few things I want you to be able to, you know, discuss as we have time. Regards to anxiety, in regards to depression, how does your book, first of all, address both of those, just the terminologies of those words, and then let's just start with that, and then I'm gonna ask you a secondary question. So, how will your book address anxiety and depression?
Well, it definitely will quote unquote address it. I feel like I have to write an encyclopedia of books at this point. Because these are complicated subjects, and it's very rare to see someone come in depressed and not have had an experience or have problems with, either currently or in the past, problems with anxiety. And I, you know, and almost a good number of the patients who present to doctors, whether they be psychiatrists or because of cultural issues, they feel more comfortable presenting to their primary care doctors, and that's why I feel very strongly and wanted to go, you know, design something where I could go to primary care offices and educate them, because it's not their fault. I don't know how they do the job they do. I am in awe of all that they do, all the medications and things that they have to know. And so if I can contribute a little bit of knowledge, I always wanted to, because, again, I just really felt that education was so important, because a lot of people feel more comfortable going to their primary care doctors for help mental illness issues. And I will touch on that, because that plays a role in suicide. I remember that after I became ill, and I remember the exact point of that, when did I realize I was ill. And I will deal with that. It's very difficult because for once in my life, my behaviors were different and I wasn't me. And I wasn't used to that. And more than that, my brain wasn't itself. My thoughts, how can I say this? It was like I wasn't in as much control of my thoughts. And it took so much work to push out these negative thoughts that I never had. And I was like, why are you in here? And, you know, I've had this illness for so long that I always compare it to my brain, and combined with the anxiety, I feel like I have like those habit trails, and I don't have mice, you know, living in cities. I've always lived in a city. I have these big, fat rats that look like dogs, city rats. And they're jumping on these habit trails, and they just go round, 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 round. And when I have a really bad day, I have the rats going, and then I have bats flying, it feels like. And my brain just does not stop with, like, racing thoughts. And along with that, I get panic attacks. And at one point, I was, I would go in early to do paperwork, and I would have to stop and run to the bathroom and puke before I started my day. I know all of this thing, so I will more than address it.
And that's why I was actually going to ask, because I want to make sure that there's this other question that I want to have answered before we finish eventually. And then we'll get to how people will be looking forward to getting your book. But with what you just mentioned in regards to just your personal experience, what is there one thing that you can mention that can aid someone having basically an anxiety attack of some sort and or going through a depressed state? Is there something that you can mention without going too much detail, but that could just curb those feelings for a period of time for a person to be able to have, be able to have a day-to-day basis to where they can function? Because what you just mentioned, that could basically like shut down a person really on a regular basis. And again, that's where I know your book is going to detail it. But can you give us one thing that could help a person that's going through maybe an episode of some sort?
Because panic attacks are very scary, and anxiety, and there are many apps out there, and a lot of them, and this helped me. I spent a year in a day hospital. Have I told you about my hospitalizations? I would say a very quick thing they can do, and please don't think, many people may say that I can't do that. I said, I can't do that. I could never. The type of meditation and things is the cognitive behavioral therapy. There's a lot of the apps things. There are so many out there, and so many that are free. And you just have to find one that fits you. And you learn how, I would teach my patients right there how to deep breathe, how to inhale for like a 4 or 5 count, hold it for about a four count, and then breathe out through your mouth and let it exhale very slowly for about a 4 or 5 count. And kind of close your eyes and put yourself in a place that's very calming. And with these apps, you can combine any kind of sound that take you to a place where you've been or not that is a calming sound. Like, I love rain. I love it. And so I always incorporate that. But literally, there are 1,000 sounds that they've come up with.
Oh, wow.
And now it's very sophisticated. And as far as I love, I can't meditate. Well, I would go into class and it would begin, and I would have to sit down, close my eyes, and meditate. And you'd be surprised when you what you have to do on the spot. You learn pretty quickly. And it is very, very helpful. And if you can make the commitment and learn the discipline, yoga is very, very helpful. Very helpful. Very, very helpful to calm yourself and to learn to control your physical symptoms. Because once that heartbeat, your heart, starts to you get that first ting where it starts to speed up, that sort of sends a loop to your brain. And that triggers the thought and a memory of previous attacks and the thoughts that go with it that makes you anxious. And then that makes the heart race faster. And then you get the whole package goes with it. And you actually create your own loop and get worse with the shaking and the nauseous and just the feelings of doom and whether it be vomiting, diarrhea, all that goes with it. And a feeling of choking, you can't breathe. And if you can stop it, prevent it, from that first trigger, heart that you feel is racing. Because sometimes people have a trigger, but there are other people who don't necessarily have a trigger. It comes out of nowhere, and people don't realize that. It's not very simple. You can be anywhere.
Okay. And I will say this, and first of all, Dr. Devlin, I want to, again, just thank you so much for being able to take the time to, talk about the subject matter. Again, it's not something that, just crosses everybody's mind just naturally and whatnot. So for all the listeners, those who are watching on Facebook Live, everybody, I hope that y'all are really, taking all this in. And of course, listen to it again after the show is over. So I want to thank you for that. And just personally, that one little nugget there that you gave probably can even help me, because there's times where I'm just stressed out about certain things. And I remember earlier this year I had something that basically put me in the emergency room. And if I had known, or maybe had thought about had that technique or whatnot, that might have helped me a little bit in that particular case. So thank you so much as far as that goes. And then, again, just your whole story, amazingly, going into putting this book together, it goes a long way to say you wanted to do this. Because, again, other people might not say, that they will want to put themselves in that position of duality, so to speak, So I appreciate you and your effort. Let me ask you this, because we're going to be wrapping up soon, but I want to make sure that people know about the book itself. Now, when is your book scheduled to be published, and how can people reach you if they wanted to discuss with you or ask questions or get help from you directly? Do you have websites, social media, anything along those lines, and when is the book going to be published?
Two things. One, I do want to mention that some of these meditation apps, if you turn them on, they also help with insomnia.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of relaxation, you'll put it on and you won't realize that you're out like a light. Because as you're meditating and calming down and closing your eyes, you don't realize you're asleep because, you know, I can have insomnia for 4 days,
mm-hmm.
which is really, really terrible.
Yeah.
Secondly, I have patients who, you know, still, you know, contact me on Facebook or, you know, IM me. Every now and then, the holidays and whatever. And these are people who, by now, know me for 10, 15 years. And I can't tell you how much that means to me. I've taken a break, a sabbatical, to get the book together. And I have so much information that I'm not going to keep renewing a license, my license or my DEA or my Maryland license to distribute medication or all that stuff because it's a tremendous amount of money, and there was no sense in it. And I would tell them that, but I also told them that once I'm your doctor, I will always be your doctor, and I will never ever turn you away. I also will tell you to listen to your doctor, but if you have a concern, run it by me. And if I hear something weird, I'll tell you just get a second opinion. You know? I'm not going to interfere in that way. I don't think that's right. But as far as contacting me, I think I talk to my patients more about nutrition, exercise, you know, and the biggest thing is a hobby, because if you don't have a hobby, a purpose, something to get up in the morning, planned, all you do is sit around. And when you sit around, what do? You think. And what do you think about? All you think about is how depressed you are and how healthy you feel. And that doesn't help me help you get better. You know,
Dr. Devlin, let me interrupt you real quick. For those who are listening live, we're about to go into extra time. Just want to thank everybody for listening today. Be sure to listen on Spreaker app to listen to the whole show. Spreaker, download it and follow the IMTN Worldwide Radio page. We're going to continue this, the finishing of her interview. But for those who are listening live, we want to thank you so much for listening to Dr. Devlin this afternoon on a bright Sunday afternoon, wherever you might be in the world. And hopefully you'll listen to the next Books to Read show. And thank you for those, again, listening to Dr. Alisa Devlin talking about her book, From Both Sides of the Chair. Go ahead, Dr. Devlin.
Oh, thank you so much. I thank you so much. I don't mean to digress. I have a stroke and I love it. And I could talk about it all day. It's my passion. And
well,
I miss helping people, and I miss the patients.
We appreciate you being
on
today.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. You take care, okay?
All
Okay, thank you for your kindness. God bless.
About her book From Both Sides of the Chair, I just wanted to make sure that we went in the extra time. I didn't want to, because the show would have cut off like crazy if I didn't do what I just did. So fortunately, I was able to do that because I didn't want her to not be able to say, you know, goodbye and everything like as I usually do. One of the things about, of course, live radio is you have to kind of, you know, roll with each particular different situation because everybody is not the same, obviously. And in this particular case, she had a lot of details in regards to her personal story and how she led up to getting to where she is. And I think everybody needed to hear it. So usually where I would have maybe interjected a little bit, I didn't want to do that this time just because of what she was saying specifically. And because when she got to the point where she said, well, she's a clinical doctor who also actually has these anxieties as well herself, and she's able to treat people with that, which came, that's how the title of the book came about. So at that point when I realized that, then I definitely wanted to be able to do this in a different way to make sure I made her as comfortable as possible as well. So like I said, I usually try to cater to each guest that I have as far as interviewing. So I'm glad I was able to do that in this particular case. I want to shout out those who were watching on Facebook Live and still might be watching. I haven't ended the show quite yet. Rico, Wayne, Sylvester, appreciate it. Anybody else who watches after that, thanks for the support. Again, sorry having to shut down the chat room, but some crazy person was talking about digging up people and all kind of, I was like, I'm trying to block him. I got distracted for a moment because I was also looking to see if this person tried to call in. Because I technically wasn't going to be able to take a call, because if it was that person, y'all didn't want to hear what he had to say. So I had to do that at the same time of listening to my guest answer the questions I was asking at the same time. That was kind of dicey for a second there. But I'm glad that Dr. Devlin was able to be on the show today, because it is an occurrence that is hurting, you know, the population as a whole. You know, when you get to that point where you just don't know what else to do, you know, and we've seen the numbers as far as suicides with young people over the last few years go up, right? And she mentioned one technique in particular as far as this on the anxiety attack part of things, and I experienced it. You know, earlier this year, I won't say exactly what happened, but it was enough for me to put myself in the emergency room. You know, it was enough for the doctor to have to do a brain scan just to make sure I was okay. You know, it was to that point. So, you know, anxiety can get everybody, even the best of us. So I appreciate Dr. Devlin coming on to the show. Her book is, she's actually still writing her book. So, there might be a time where we might actually invite her back on the show to where when her book is published. But if you look her up, Dr. Elisa Devlin, and also you can actually, and if you look at the promo for the show, if you go to, let me see, because I want to make sure I say the actual name right here. Let me see if I can find it real quick. Again, thanks for y'all. Global Summit House. So if you go to Global Summit House, the website, You'd be able to probably pull her information up eventually as that book becomes published. It's not out quite yet, but if you look her up by name, Dr. Elisa Devlin, you'll probably be able to pull her up as well. So, again, thanks to Dr. Devlin for coming on to the show today, again, to address a particular topic that, again, not everybody really wants to talk about. They want to push it aside. Don't worry about it. I'm good. But we've seen not just with young people, with older ones, too. Think about all the celebrities this year, decade after decade, to where that is the one of the main reasons they're not with us anymore. I think about Robin Williams. More so than anybody, because he was the comedian extraordinaire, making everybody happy and smile and laugh and everything. But he's going through this and that and this and that, and all of a sudden he ain't here no more, right? And again, it's something that can be addressed, but it has to be addressed at a certain point, right? And you have to want to address it too, and then you have to have people around you that want to. Excuse me, wants to address it as well. So thanks to all those who are still listening. Thanks to those who listen to the live version. Thanks to those who will go back and download the Spreaker app and follow the IMPN Worldwide Radio page and click on shows and click on books to read. I will be downloading this show later on this afternoon for people to listen to. And stay tuned for more shows coming up, Women in Business show. We'll have some new episodes soon. And, of course, every week on IMTN Worldwide Radio, we have the show Around the ATL, which just recently celebrated their one-year anniversary a couple of weekends ago. Every Wednesday night at 10 o'clock is that particular show. So, again, if you're not following on Instagram and Facebook, do that now, IMTN Worldwide Radio. And please download the Spreaker app and follow the IMTN Worldwide Radio page. Recently on CastBox, now another platform where you can listen to the show, besides Spotify and Google Play Music and various others, Blog Talk Radio, of course, Spreaker. So there's a lot of different ways to listen to programming on IMTN Worldwide Radio, and again, we appreciate all the support from everybody who's been listening over the years as far as IMTN Worldwide Radio is concerned, and of course, other programs that have just been initialized. So, we're going to call it a day. Again, thank you for listening. Thanks, Dr. Lisa Devlin, for coming on to the show, making up time for us today. We really appreciate talking about from both sides of the chair, book in regards to anxiety, depression, coping with it, and what can be done to, to handle it and to prevent these things from happening over and over and over and over and over again. Your story is very tremendous, very inspirational, really, when you think about it, how you kind of told us that you're kind of putting yourself out there right now as someone who has these issues, but you're also a doctor treating other people with those issues. So that was a pretty cool announcement there. We appreciate you trusting us to do that. So that being said, we're going to go ahead and get out of here. This is Chris on IMTN Worldwide Radio. This was Books to Read. We'll talk to you again next time.